Much time and effort has been invested in dose escalation on the radiation side. There were several institutional trials, including our institution, where we tried to escalate the dose to 70, 80, even 90 gray. And the initial results were quite promising, but were somewhat biased by smaller tumors being treated to higher doses. And that can more easily, safely be achieved than if one has a typical, stage 3B or 3C patients, like the patient that we just discussed, in whom it's likely not safe to go to those doses. This was followed by a large randomized phase 3 trial, RTOG-0617, which compared 60 gray versus 74 gray and showed that the higher dose arm did not result in better overall survival. In fact, it was worse survival, and even more surprisingly, even worse local control. Now, there's many reasons why one can speculate why that might be. Technical reasons, quality control reasons. One of the factors that came out was cardiac radiation dose, which was correlated with survival, which is not completely clear yet what the pathophysiology behind that is. But what became clear was that just going to a higher dose on a blanket prescription basis, meaning everybody should get 74 gray no matter how large the tumor is or what it involves, is probably a little too simplistic of an approach and does not work. So 60 gray remains the standard of care in terms of the radiation dose. Similar efforts have been done on the medical oncology side with adding more chemotherapy, either before concurrent chemoradiation or after concurrent chemoradiation for consolidation or maintenance. And those also have failed. They all showed increased toxicity, but no improvement in survival.
I think that RTOG trial also looked at cetuximab, the anti-EGFR antibody. I think it was during the chemoradiation, was it not?
Yep.
And I guess in a way to try to sensitize it, or that seemed to fail also.
Yeah, there were some early phase data that suggested that cetuximab may have a role, and obviously EGFR plays a role in lung cancer, and that was really at a time where the whole mutational landscape was still being discovered and the driver mutations and the erlotinibs and TKI landscape really evolved. So I think it was an early idea. It was designed in 2006 or started in 2006. So cetuximab was added as a third and fourth arm to compare with and without cetuximab, each of the arms. And that failed as well. That did not show any significant difference. It was also not a selected patient population for EGFR overexpression or anything like that.
I don't know if this man asked you for, some ideas in terms of numbers, in terms of likelihood that he was going to develop recurrence and metastatic disease. If he did, or even if he didn't, what numbers would you have given him?
I'm generally very cautious with numbers because it can be very misleading. Not that numbers are not real, but when talking to patients, I generally caution that a number is only an average number. It does not give a specific prognosis for an individual. If, let's say, someone has a 90% chance of surviving but is in the unlucky 10%, that doesn't help you that 90% of the other patients do well because you're in the unlucky 10%. And the other way around, if your chance of doing well is only 10%, but you're one of the lucky 10%, that does not affect you that 90% of people in your situation don't do well. But generally, the median survival is on the order of 2 to 3 years. That is, I think, consistent across more recent trials. And I still tell patients that the long-term chances that they will be completely without lung cancer recurrence are, if they really ask me numbers, are on the order of 30% with more modern chemoradiation. And that's really changed with the addition of adjuvant durvalumab, which you alluded to.